This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.
You are listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. On today's episode, we will be discussing part two of The Addicted Teenager and Their Family.
So let's talk about other children and siblings of the addicted teen. Let's move on to the dynamics that go on there in our families. If you have another child in particular who is compliant and doing well, it's really easy to neglect them or time with them. And they end up not getting enough attention because you're devoted to fixing your addicted teen.
That is true.
And it's hard on that one kid who's just kind of flying under the radar.
Yes. And it's often, I talk with parents who are struggling so much and they know that. They know that this other kid is needing more, but it only adds very often to the parent's shame of I'm failing. So If you've already started with the misassumption or the misunderstanding that my teenager's continual drug or alcohol use is really a reflection of me as a parent, and that's error number one. Mm-hmm. Then, and then error number two means it's my job to fix this. And I'm not going to be done as a parent until I have quote, gotten them away from this addiction, which then means you're going to very likely be in the driver's or in this parenting seat for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. Then when you do see that, and my sweet middle child is just watching this and she gets so tearful and whatever, you can't do anything different. You just feel terrible about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a chain of helplessness. It has to come back to your sweet middle child has to deal with whatever they've been raised in anyway. It's their deal. It's not all about you. And then secondly, it still gets back to how do you appropriately hold an addict accountable for their behavior while maybe offering treatment options if they will do it, but still holding them accountable that no one is so addicted that they cannot resist going, buying, and consuming. Like you have to back way up and not be around it. You know, that's what treatment is all about, is recognizing your triggers, all that. There is no human that literally cannot be held accountable because their body just starts walking and goes to the liquor store. That's not a thing. They just have to manage more and more their weakness in different ways. But that, especially with teenagers, but with all ages, you got to remember that is a project of that individual to learn how they must manage themselves. You cannot do it for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's good that I think at some point a parent has to say, our kids, we love them all, but that one kid cannot take 99% of our time. We have to go back and reassess and say that that child has, you know, boundaries on our time and our limitations to what we can do because we have other children that need love and attention.
That's right.
And need to be raised also.
But, you know, that's a common, not even just an addiction, that's a common family pattern if you don't know planned emancipation. That you can think of lots of families that didn't get to the level of addiction, but the one kid that really never really got on their feet and always was kind of having either relationship or financial problems, they're the one that tended to get most of the focus from the parents. And that's because, again, parents can't see that at this point we're done with helping. We're concerned, we're involved, but you know, a lot of people know of parents that will just always be there to help and support and financially provide and kind of argue about and whatever, because this, I don't know, 40-year-old kid still kind of isn't getting there, and they still think it's their job to do that. So planned emancipation is a critical factor in being able to have a relationship with all of your kids and not being drained by one kid. But it's, you know, addiction is hard enough, but even in lesser ways, it is important to be able to recognize your boundaries there, because yeah, like you said, other children are watching, and it can really draw down what they're gaining in the family and kind of change their whole experience.
Would it be wise to make time to sit down with your other children and either talk to them about what they've seen or experienced going on with the older teen that's addicted, or have time to ask them if they have any questions?
Sure. You definitely need to do that when a teenager is, you know, during the period of where they're probably kind of tumbling down further and further. So this parent is thinking we have it all wrapped up, and then find out that, you know, I came across a stash of stuff I didn't even know that she had. You know, it's just this series of emergencies and disappointment and betrayal. And in the process of that, a lot of times, especially with adolescents, you're going to end up doing a lot more, for example, intervention. You know, you're grounded. I took his phone again. You know, one of the things that happens is that younger kids, it'll blur that whole planned emancipation schedule. So one of the things to talk to your younger kids about is where you can, you know, if your brother hadn't been again found with alcohol, you know, he wouldn't have a curfew now, or he would be that, you know, he would be having these freedoms. These are only temporarily reduced because of his behavior, so that they can see that you'll be able to grow up. All this mess you see where we're always having, he seems to be not allowed to go anywhere. That's not because we treat your 17-year-old brother like a 12-year-old. That's because he's once again having to pay for his own behavior. Things like that, I think, are important because it does blur for that next kid the pattern that you want to be showing, which is this you know, constant sort of emergencies we're having with your sibling. We're not liking this. This isn't, we don't want to be doing this. We expected that this wouldn't be, we wouldn't really be this involved with her or him by this point.
Right. And I would think that that would be a fear or concern of parents who their oldest child is the addicted teen and they have younger ones underneath, and the addicted teen is really setting a poor example.
That's right.
And so I think it would be common for that parent to maybe overreact or just be concerned that the oldest child is setting a really bad example, and this is not what they're supposed to be doing, and this isn't what you expect of them. And this isn't the path we want you going on either. You know,
yeah, you know, since you mentioned that, there's another pattern that you want to avoid, which is if it's one of your younger siblings or children, it's not unusual for an older, definitely the oldest, to, if they have that kind of compliant temperament, to kind of take on the role of a third parent. That, you know, mom, I told him, I let him have it for what he's been doing. And I think it's important to also remind your older siblings or your older children that this is my kid. It's not your kid. And I don't need your help in parenting this. You grow up and you do your life. I appreciate your concern for him. I hope you're supportive. And sure, I'm glad you're confrontive, but I want you to know that you don't need to stay home just because we found out that your brother got another DUI. You go on, because it can be, you know, when it's scary, and especially if you're alone in this parenting, my spouse is not a support. It is an easy temptation to draw emotional support from an older sibling. I mean, an older child of yours, a sibling of the addicted teenager, that you really need to avoid that. They need to grow up and do their own thing. And you want to separate those two things out, so the younger sibling can feel, you know, extra responsible to be overly supportive of you in that way. And then the older one can sometimes do that too. So mm-hmm. you really want to make sure that they know their boundaries, that this doesn't change your life. You'd live what you're doing, and I'm really glad you're making good choices.
Those are good words. Mm-hmm. So I bet it's easy for siblings to become angry and resentful or very worried and anxious about their sibling and cause a lot of strain in the relationship. How do we encourage our kids to have boundaries with their addicted teen sibling, but also just really encourage them to reach out to them and continue that friendship and that relationship? Because sometimes you're so burned, you don't even want anything to do with that person, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know what the most common is that you've got siblings that are really mad at this addicted teenager.
Yes.
But that's extra sort of heated up because the parent is just not mad. Look, she's just really having a hard time, which is patronizing, it's mm-hmm. disrespectful, and it's overdoing your parenting role. So believe it or not, one of the things that can help is that appropriately, it's perfectly reasonable to tell their brother or sister, I know, I am so mad at him. This is just ridiculous. And he's grounded, but I'm not grounded because I'm mad at him. It's because he's used, you know, whatever, but I totally get that. That can actually help siblings. Sometimes siblings are of any teenager actually carry their parents' resentment for them because mm-hmm. you've been so saintly that they actually are mad at what this kid is doing to you. Again, that mm-hmm. goes back to what I said before. No, thanks a lot. You live your life. I don't need you to kind of argue for me. But I think that's one thing is make sure that your other kids are not carrying anger for how you're being treated. And then the other part is that I recognize that part of appropriate kind of anger is still part of what's being respectful, that no matter what level of addiction, this young person absolutely is still choosing to try that impossible thing, which is to balance just a little bit of addiction. Dr. Wilkes, I just want to do it occasionally. Okay. Just, you can't, it won't work. You're going to dive right back into it. And they'll do that for years and years and years. And respectfully, it is not inappropriate at all to be really angry that you're this person continuing to do that. So, mm-hmm. you know, mostly I find that it's parents overdo the, hey, we mustn't at all be mad. Because it implies that kind of attitude implies that this sibling is helpless and mm-hmm. like in an emotional wheelchair and couldn't keep from doing this if they tried. That is never true. It's never that bad. As much as the addiction does draw you in that compulsive behavior and it makes it very difficult to avoid, there is no such thing as impossible to avoid.
You're kind of touching on my next question, Dr. Ken. It's easy as a parent to be so angry or resentful or scared that you put a lot of emotional distance there between you and your teen. You don't want to be hurt. It's been so painful and so disappointing and so difficult that you just really want to opt out of that relationship with your teen and check out. How do you keep putting yourself out there and continue to work on that relationship with your teen when you've been so hurt?
Well, there's different patterns of that. The most common pattern of what you're talking about is the spouse of the parent that is really running the enabling has a spouse that is quiet and trying very hard not to display that I pretty much hate this kid of mine. Like there can be such anger, mm-hmm. But it is displaced anger because it'll be partly, what this young person is responsible for the selfishness and the choices that they're making. It's also easy for that spouse to also carry resentment or to put resentment onto this addicted teenager because of the marriage problem that we're having. And that's not your teenager's fault. Mm-hmm. So that one pattern is the most common is that there's a quiet, just seething parent that is in fact the one that is not doing the enabling. The enabling kind of parent, the one that is trying too hard and overdoing is the one that will almost like get tired of going on stage. I have to go in there and hey, and they're not going to feel comfortable showing their anger like they really should. And they kind of will be real parental when they're with this addicted teenager, but then they just find themselves not wanting to be around her or him very much. And so mm-hmm. it is a matter of recognizing the difference between the kind of anger that is appropriate out of respect for this person that really could and should be doing better than this and not other kind of anger that you're carrying that's not the addict's fault, like the damage to the marriage, all that kind of stuff, or the damage you've done to my reputation as a parent. That's not what this is about. So I think it's a matter of not just controlling the anger, but kind of recognizing where is this coming from and putting it in the proper sort of slots.
And I wouldn't downplay either the power of praying and just getting your own heart right with the Lord and handing over what you can't control.
Well, good luck with that. I mean, you know, I struggle with fear all the time and feel so, it's ridiculous how unsettled I get over nothing. And these situations are really scary.
For sure.
So I but think I always... you're right. It's a true burden of holiness that, you know, we can and we really could be at peace through these times. But man, that's a deep level of faith to even know that, that not only is this not my problem mainly, it has already been promised to me that this is working out in a good way. Oh, really? Tell me about that. You know what I mean? So you're right. But boy, this is deep water doing it in these circumstances.
For sure. For sure. And, but I always feel like anytime I walk in, you know, I'm so much easier to react versus respond. And so I guess maybe that'll come later.
Well, I think that's exactly what it is that usually what I find is that, addiction and parenting through addiction is one of many ways that we get worn down. You know, I've always said half of wisdom is just getting tired. You know, I thought I could do this and control this and whatever. You just, you get older and you're going, you know what? You know, that's just, I can't fix that. And addiction is a severe example of that, where parents that may be starting mostly reading books and thinking about what I should be doing years later are just praying. And when people come and give them this new idea of what you should be doing, they smile and say, you know, I totally know that. But right now we're just praying through because that's all we got. And that's spiritual growth that, you know, this thing helps to do that and get you more to a kind of poor in spirit, which is in our faith, actually a blessing.
Right. Yeah. Well, Dr. Ken, before we wrap up, I want to ask about other families. This may not be our story for our family having an addicted teenager, but we might have close friends or a family in our church that is walking through this.
Yeah.
How can we encourage or come alongside those families?
Okay. So I would, number one, make sure that everyone knows that one good way of doing that is being loving, praying for them. You don't have to say anything about this. If this is not a really close friend of yours or extended family, then it is important for people to know that there's one option, which is sometimes something this painful to watch and this difficult isn't really your business. So you don't have to be the one to confront, make the little hint, kind of, you know, get them to see. That happens, I think, all too often in a church. So I think it's first, you need to recognize that it might be that you really extra loving to them, you pray for them, but you may not have one word of advice or even confronting because that's not your role in their life. But then number two, I think if you do know that, well, this is my brother and his kids, or this is my closest friend and that's the relationship we have, then in that case, I think you do look to basically state the truth that you think is your role to share without pushing it and allow them to ignore you. If you're working with the Spirit of Christ, then you're not the one that will be landing the big final lesson. It will be more like some things that you might say, even some things that you may not heartily agree with, that they'll notice that, gee, I just told you how, you know, burdened I am because I feel like it's my fault. And you didn't go, yeah, I know. I mean, just what you agree with, what you don't agree with, and gentle things that you might say, working with what you think the Spirit might be already kind of taking them toward. That's really the wise way to do that. So I would do it in that order. First, consider that what you're watching is painful. It stirs your heart. You pray hard. You love them. You don't need to say anything of advice. And then the other is, if you are a part of it, then do all you can to try to see where the spirit has this person. If you see someone that is your worst nightmare of enabling, boy, he just has no idea, then it's unlikely that what you need to do is a strong sit them down and really confront them. It's possible, but I see mostly people doing that to relieve themselves of their burden. And in those cases, it's more a matter of walking with them and the gentle word, the occasional seconding what they're telling you. I had someone come and tell me the other day that they thought maybe I should hold him more responsible. Can you believe that? And you go, actually, I've kind of thought that too. You know, that's not your big confronting, but you did join in with what someone else was saying, and help there where you can. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, and most the thing that you, it's a test of our faith that we do all this because we do believe that God loves that addicted teenager way more than you do and their parents do. And so right. It is, in fact, if it's going to reflect on anybody, it reflects on God because they're his kids. So there should be a kind of peace in that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important in any of these situations where you're alongside another family with a teen that's struggling, that you are not judgmental or critical and pointing out like, well, if they had done this different, then they wouldn't end up with a kid like that. You know, that's so painful and so hurtful. And I see that happening behind people's backs. People mm-hmm. are judging character behind people's backs. They're judging character in front of their faces too, you know, and that can be just added so trauma and stress when you're already struggling with your teen. So it's easy to do to be critical when you're not in that situation, right?
That's right.
So thank you guys both. This has been a heavy topic, but I think we've covered a lot of things today that'll be extremely helpful to our listeners and to us to be able, Ashley and I, to be able to talk with our friends and family members who have situations like this going on in their lives. Thank you, Dr. Kin.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.